The original podcast was recorded in German. This podcast was translated using artificial intelligence. Burn Rate, the Venture Insider podcast with Max Meister.
Hello and welcome to Burn Rate, the VC Insider podcast. I'm happy to be here with Maximilian Bulk and Guy Giuffredi to talk about the startup scene with a focus on venture capital. This is episode 53, and we're recording on Wednesday, June 11th at 9 p.m. This podcast is sponsored by our two partners, the Upscaler Program and Omnium. Many thanks to our sponsors. Guy, what are today's topics?
Today in the news, we have the Swiss Economic Awards, the artificial intelligence report from Mary Meeker, and the Andreessen Horowitz Scout Network in Europe. In our deep dive topic, we'll cover the current challenges faced by scale-ups. And in the listener question, we'll answer whether a General Assembly, GV, really must be held by the end of June or not. And our deal of the week is the Series A round of Jua.ai.
Let's go back to our first news item. As I mentioned last week, I attended the SEF. Once again, it was excellent. Many exciting people. You can truly say that SEF is still a top-tier event. I actually worked there during my studies and shortly afterwards, almost like the right hand of Peter Staley and Steph Lindy. It was an incredibly valuable time, and I always enjoy returning to Interlaken. It's a top event. At the Swiss Economic Forum, the most promising young entrepreneurs in Switzerland were once again honored in the categories of industrial services, high tech, and biotech. The winners were Depoly, Kyan Health, and Lumvin. I was on site in Interlaken and attended the award ceremony. But let's be critical here. What does such an award like the Swiss Economic Award actually bring to a startup, aside from media attention?
That's a great question. We actually discussed the topic of startup awards in Switzerland critically back in episode 51. Now, the Swiss Economic Award, as you said, is a business event, not a classic startup pitch competition. So it has to be viewed differently. The companies are selected through a thorough process. Lucas Frösch from the Growth Program once told me about it. There's an initial jury that spends 2 to 3 days traveling to meet the startups, evaluating them on site and talking to the founders. Then it goes to a main jury for the final event where 3 winners are selected. I've thought that it might be more relevant for direct-to-consumer startups because the media hype can attract attention from potential customers, which could be leveraged. But for investors, I don't think it sticks. It's just another award, perhaps a slightly better one. But the companies are often further along. These are more like scale-ups, not early-stage startups. So it's a nice award, a seal of approval, but I doubt it really moves the needle with investors. It might create short-term market visibility. For example, I know Freddie Hunziker, who won the award in 2019 with New Roots, a D2C food tech startup that produces vegan cheese using traditional methods. He told me very plainly the media hype was amazing and he felt like a real entrepreneur. But that hype faded quickly. It didn't bring anything with investors or the market. But there is one big but: employees. There, it had a huge effect. They looked at the website, saw the award, and were impressed, especially during the scale-up phase when you're hiring a lot. That kind of validation helps attract better talent than you'd otherwise get. So the impact is mostly on employees, and the rest is,
Interesting that you mentioned that. I hadn't really thought of that. Who is the stakeholder that benefits most from such an award? I agree. For employees, it's valuable. It makes them proud and it makes employer branding and recruiting easier. Good point. I also think it can be a label for some investors, but serious VCs? They're unlikely to invest based on an award. Maybe for angels, it's a bit more relevant. The hype reminds me of something like Dragon's Den. In the end, it comes down to what you make of it. If you know you'll win, you need to prepare in advance. Partner with a PR agency, push the story, keep the momentum going for weeks. If you don't do anything, the hype fades. That's how hype works. But if you invest time and maybe some money, you can extend that wave. So yes, overall, it can be valuable, depending on how you use it. For me, it's still the biggest and best entrepreneurship award in Switzerland. It even predates my time. But from the beginning, they've honored entrepreneurs who later became major success stories. So it can be a forward-looking indicator of future winners. Thanks, Guy, for the insights. Let's move to the second news item. I came across a very interesting report, the Trends in Artificial Intelligence report by Mary Meeker from Bond Capital. We'll link to it in our LinkedIn post. For many in the tech and investment world, this report is like the gospel of the next wave. It doesn't just look at what happened in recent months, but focuses on what really matters now: speed, cost, and orchestration of resources. A few points stood out to me. I could go on for half an hour, but I won't. ChatGPT reached 800 million users in record time, faster than any tech before it. Also, OpenAI recently announced $10 billion in annual recurring revenue. That's insanely fast growth. What's also striking, inference costs have dropped 99%, while training costs have skyrocketed to over $1 billion. And the most exciting thesis for me, it's not just about the models, it's about who can orchestrate them best, who can combine models, humans, and workflows to generate real, sustainable productivity. What was the most interesting insight for you? And from a VC perspective, are we already talking about agentic AI, or are we in Europe still too focused on comparing model performance?
You've already summarized the key points nicely. It's a fascinating and rich report. From a VC perspective, I think in Europe, we're still underestimating the shift from tech ownership to workflow ownership. Model IP is becoming a commodity, just like data centers. You'll have the big players, OpenAI, Anthropic, etc. But the real value is in the productivity layer, building real applications with growing KPIs. Whoever can orchestrate this well will build a fast scaling company. It's about the transition from technical IP to usable product. Another takeaway? In Europe, we're still talking about parameter counts and benchmarks, but the fast-growing companies are focused on human-machine collaboration stacks, not the perfect benchmark models. They'll just use the best model available, maybe 15 different ones, and make it work. Very interesting. And as we said, we'll link to the report. You should subscribe to our newsletter to get the link.
Exactly. In the newsletter, definitely worth reading. Let's now move to the third news item, Andreessen Horowitz, probably the most well-known VC brand besides Sequoia. Last year, they opened a European office with great fanfare and declared it the first step in a stronger physical presence in Europe. Now, somewhat surprisingly, the news came out that they're shutting down that office. According to Sifted, one of the reasons is that they struggled to build enough institutional connections and had difficulty gaining local traction, which surprises me, honestly. That a 16Z couldn't establish a presence in London, that's pretty unexpected. Instead, they're now focusing more on a decentralized scout model. The Andreessen Horowitz, a 16Z network, currently includes around 20 active scouts in Europe, 9 of whom are new in 2025. Most of them are founders and operators from the AI space, from companies like 11labs, Asana, or Cursor. The scouts invest smaller tickets between $10,000 and $25,000 into early stage startups, with the option for follow-on funding later from Andreessen Horowitz. I find that approach very interesting. It's a very US-style solution for the European terrain. Guy, what do you think? Is such a decentralized setup enough to ensure real deal flow quality in Europe, or is something lost in the long term without local presence, like a physical office in London or Berlin, that could help build relationships with founders?
Ideally, they would have set up an office in London, Berlin, Zurich, or Paris that would have allowed the 16Z venture know-how to spill over into our ecosystem. That would have been a huge accelerator for us. Now, 20 scouts feels like too little to cover all of Europe. There are many hubs, and Europe is highly fragmented. One scout in Switzerland might be able to fully scout 8th Zurich and EPFL, but even that's doubtful with this setup. But to be fair, a 16Z has massive brand power. If a scout gets wind of a strong team or idea and reaches out, every founder will respond. We've seen that with Nunu AI, a fascinating gaming use case where an AI agent runs test simulations in a video game. They managed to raise easily and are likely now fully backed out of the US. That's a validation that the scout model can work, at least in individual cases.
To me, it still feels like a half measure. I'm not sure the scouts can fully replicate what it means to be truly embedded. We have a scout network at Koyo too, and they're doing a great job. But being physically present, going to events, showing up as a general partner, that's a whole different level of engagement. So yes, this move surprises me, especially now that the US market is showing weakness and more capital is shifting into Europe. It's odd that a 16Z is scaling back. I'm curious how that will develop.
We should know when the decision was made. If it was in early 2025, then everyone was still focused on the US. But over the last 2 to 3 months, sentiment has shifted. Europe now has more leverage again. Maybe this decision gets reversed and a 16Z does return with a European office. We'll see. It remains interesting.
Want to scale your startup quickly and successfully, not just grow it? Then the Upscaler program is perfect for you. It gives you access to our large pool of founders, entrepreneurs, and the right investors. Over 50 startups have already benefited from 500 plus workshops and have scaled their business nationally and internationally. You can find more information at www.upscaler.ch. With Omnium, you can close your funding round faster and more successfully. Omnium is our partner and an innovative platform for growth financing, a true one-stop shop. They offer a fully digital, streamlined, and cost-efficient process, including legal framework, investor KYC, and payment handling. With Omnium, you can either do a private round using the platform only, or go for Private Round Plus with access to 10,000 plus registered investors. If you want maximum visibility, choose the public round, open to all investors. With Omnium, your funding round becomes faster and more efficient.
Let's move to the main topic. This week, we're tackling maybe the most important topic for any startup that's outgrown its early stage: growth. Specifically, we're talking about strategic scaled growth and the pitfalls along the way. Because although Europe's scale-ups remain optimistic according to the latest Deloitte Scale-Up Confidence Survey, reality is often complex. The acquisition of new customers remains the top priority for 73% of surveyed companies. Other key factors: expansion into new markets, building strong teams, and securing liquidity. Interestingly, many scale-ups still don't have a clear exit strategy, and when they do, they typically prefer a trade sale over an IPO. We're also seeing a new generation of experienced female founders emerging in Spain and Switzerland with more clarity, ambition, and a strong desire for international growth. A good example is a recent piece on Gründerszene, where the TaxFix CEO outlines 5 common growth stage mistakes, like premature internationalization, weak leadership culture, or high burn rates without solid unit economics. We'll share that link in our newsletter. Definitely worth reading. Summary: growth is not a straight line, but a balancing act between ambition and discipline. Let's open the discussion. Feel free to write to us with your thoughts. What do you think, Guy? Why do so many scale-ups struggle to grow sustainably despite having capital and traction in their home market?
We need to zoom out here. Growth in the scale-up phase is fundamentally different than in seed or series A. In the early days, the founder, their energy, their talent, that drives things forward. It's organic. Founders are the best salespeople for their own product. They're still selling vision through product. But once you enter the scaling phase, you need processes and leadership systems. You need KPI discipline with clear reporting and optimization. You have to build middle management, operational structures. Founders often underestimate this housekeeping work. It's hard not just to delegate tasks, but to delegate responsibility. They have to stop hovering like helicopters and start trusting the organization. That means changing roles, stepping into a CTO role maybe, and hiring a professional CEO or growth manager. It's not capital that ensures execution. It's dangerous to scale fast without evolving the organization and culture. Otherwise, you end up with a big team, high burn rate, and low morale because no one is really performing well or aligned.
In Switzerland, we often see technically excellent, highly focused teams, but they're slow to go to market. Is that a cultural issue or a structural one?
A bit of both. We have a strong engineering DNA that leads to high product quality, but we're raised to aim for perfection, not the 80-20 mindset. So we're punished more for the last 20% that's missing. We also have world-class universities producing lots of deep tech founders. So yes, we build cutting-edge technologies, and naturally, engineers are behind those. But we don't have a large consumer market for quick product market validation. That creates a different mentality.
What I find super interesting is when I talk to Swiss founders about exit strategies, and I've seen this for years, I often ask, what's your exit strategy? And the answer I get is often, what's an exit strategy? This is slightly exaggerated. Of course, I don't mean to offend anyone, and it's not inherently wrong. You can argue that you don't start a company to sell it, but because you believe in the value you're creating for shareholders, but also for society, and that's a wonderful thing. But founders in Switzerland rarely make clear and deliberate considerations about exit strategies. Most just know that investors will ask about it, so they prepare a sentence or two and repeat it when needed. But experienced investors can see right through that. It's a huge contrast. When you talk to Israeli or American founders, they've thought through their exit strategy in detail from the very beginning. They can explain who might acquire them, when, and very importantly, why. They can speak for 5 to 10 minutes about why company ABC from country D would be a perfect acquirer. And they even start reaching out early, building relationships with the right people inside those companies, the decision makers. That way, they're close to the conversation and get feedback like, why would we acquire you, or what's still missing? They're way ahead in that regard, much more proactive. And I really think Swiss founders can learn a lot from that to develop a clear, well-reasoned, and credible exit strategy early on. It's critical, especially before internationalizing or raising large funding rounds, to ask yourself, who might buy the company? Could an IPO be realistic? What are the key value drivers?
Totally agree. You have to prepare for this like an exam. You'll only get top marks if you know what's coming, if you've practiced. And practicing in this case means preparing your exit scenarios, having those discussions with potential buyers. Find out what matters to them. What KPIs are they focused on? Should you aim for high EBITDA? Or do they want large market coverage, multiple geographies, or a huge user base? Based on those insights, you may steer the company a bit differently over 2 or 3 years. If you don't plan for this and suddenly decide to sell, you might be measured against the wrong metric.
I recently had a founder say to me, I don't worry, I always look great when I show up anywhere and buyers come to me. And you know what? That's not a bad attitude either. There's this idea that great, profitable, fast-growing companies will always find buyers. And there's some truth to that. Some say, we don't focus on the market, we just focus on ourselves, our capabilities, our product, and if we do well, buyers will come. That's not completely wrong, but I still say, do good and talk about it. You still need to test the waters, get feedback, see what resonates, what needs refining. This lean startup mindset applies to exits as well.
A founder is like a good footballer. The most talented ones who train the hardest and smartest, they're the ones who make it to the Champions League. Talent alone won't get you the best exit. You need to actively work on the right KPIs.
I remember witnessing the international expansion of Uber under Travis Kalanick. That was wild. We shared the same office building in Zurich and I saw it up close. They ran a blitz scaling strategy like no other and rolled out across Europe within weeks. They had tons of capital and a tiny strike team doing the work, kind of like what Rocket Internet tried to do with their startups. It was extremely impressive in how focused and bold they were. And in that regard, I think we can still learn from the Americans and from the Israelis too. We do many things right, no question, but sometimes it's good to just test the waters internationally, not with the whole company or all your resources, just send a small tag team, scout out the foreign market. And if it looks promising, then you need to bite down and keep going, even if the early days are rough. Being successful in your home market is one thing, but expanding and winning abroad, where it's tougher, that's the real achievement. Respect to all Swiss companies who've pulled that off. Let's move to our listener question, which is very relevant right now. It comes from Claudio in Zurich, who runs a startup with 3 million Swiss francs in revenue, 10 employees, and external investors on board. He proudly asks, do I absolutely have to hold the General Assembly, GV, by the end of June? And what happens if I don't? Great question. And first, congrats, Claudio. Before answering, we consulted with our legal partner, Wenger Vieli, specifically Michael Bayer, a D&A and VC lawyer. Here's his statement, translated with the voice of Guy.
The ordinary general assembly of a Swiss company must take place within 6 months of the end of the financial year. This is especially important for the re-election of board members. If the statutes define a one-year term ending at the next General Assembly, then, according to the Swiss Federal Supreme Court, the board's term ends 6 months after the fiscal year, if no new assembly or re-election has occurred. At that point, the board is no longer properly constituted, which creates an organizational deficiency. This raises serious legal questions regarding the liability of the board and the validity of board decisions made after that point.
Thanks, Mishi, for that important clarification. This is a critical point and often underestimated. Yes, Claudio, the General Assembly must be held within 6 months of the financial year end. For companies with a calendar year fiscal close, that means by June 30th. Why? Because the General Assembly is the highest governing body in a Swiss AG. It must approve the financial statements, decide how profits or retained losses are handled, discharge the board, and re-elect them. And as Mishi said, if that doesn't happen within the deadline, you're violating the law. And you risk civil and corporate law consequences. In practice, it's not like the authorities issue automatic fines or the prosecutor jumps in, but if there's a dispute, say, with an investor or shareholder, this can be flagged as a formal defect. It becomes especially problematic if decisions or contracts are made after June 30th without a valid General Assembly. Those actions can be challenged. Even board liability issues can arise.
Exactly, especially if there are external investors like business angels, VCs, or family offices. They take this stuff seriously. In tough times, it becomes a trust and governance issue. We once had a long due diligence process with a VC, and in the legal DD at the very end, they found a formality error like this, and it led to cancelling the investment, even after a term sheet had been signed, which is a real shame. So what's the workaround if everyone involved is on the same page? Yes, fortunately, there are pragmatic solutions. The General Assembly can be held in writing without a physical meeting as long as 100% of shareholders agree. They don't even have to attend or miss out on the apéro. Just make sure everything is clearly documented, signed, and that the circular resolution is dated before June 30th.
Yes, I do think this topic is taken too lightly. I've seen it myself as an investor. I once wanted to invest in a startup and noticed that the company had never held a General Assembly. Well, they had one technically. They had external investors and had appointed observers, but somehow they had simply forgotten to conduct the proper meeting. That's very unusual because legally, no one is monitoring whether the GV happens, especially if there's no audit firm involved. So our clear recommendation, hold the GV. As we've said, it can be done very efficiently in writing. But don't underestimate it, especially if you have external shareholders involved. Thanks again to Claudio for the question. I think it's more relevant to startup founders than people realize.
And if you're listening to this episode during your summer holidays, maybe on a beach, and you haven't held your GV yet, just communicate transparently with your investors and catch up on it as soon as possible. That way it's properly handled and you don't end up in a situation where there are no GV records after multiple years. Worry, but don't worry too much for now.
Okay, let's move on to the transaction of the week. We're talking about a startup from Zurich that definitely thinks globally, Jua.ai. They just closed their Series A round, raising $11 million, led by Ananda Impact Ventures and Future Energy Ventures. Guy, you took a closer look at the team and the platform. Let's start from the beginning. What does Jua do and where do they come from?
Yes, Jua should be a familiar name to our most loyal listeners. We actually covered their seed round back in episode 12, more than 40 episodes ago in February 2024. The vision was, and still is, to build a fundamental physics model for the real world, not just for weather, but as a universal simulation platform. The team focused early on concrete applications in energy, agriculture and insurance sectors where accurate forecasts can have real economic impact if done correctly. Their model was already 20 times larger and more comprehensive than most competitors, according to Jua. With more input data and more accurate representations of physical processes, that was a year and a half ago. Back then, they didn't have a product on the market yet. The team was spread out, Zurich, Berlin and Cape Town, fully remote and truly global. Jua was founded in 2022. The team brings deep experience with past roles at DeepMind, Meta, and the Climate Corporation. Their AI-powered model simulating Earth's physical processes is called the Earth Intelligence Platform.
Their approach goes far beyond traditional weather data. They've built a large physics model working with massive data volumes, not gigabytes, but petabytes. With it, they simulate how environmental and energy markets behave, not just how they might behave. That's obviously very interesting.
The strength of Jua lies in how they combine physics and AI in a way very few have done so far. We won't go into technical details now, that would be too dry. But their platform reportedly outperforms both classic numerical weather models and the AI models from big tech firms. That's based on independent benchmarks available in the market. Their model is designed not just for forecasting, but for integration into real-world decision systems.
And that's what I find exciting. They focus on economically relevant use cases, like energy trading. There, accurate forecasts of supply and demand, grid load, or even spot prices offer a real competitive edge.
Exactly. Unlike when we last covered Jua in episode 12, their platform is now being used actively. Several energy traders are using Jua in their trading interfaces daily to anticipate price movements and automate decisions. It's a real operational product now, not just a research project.
That's a strong sign of traction. Do you know in which markets they're active?
They've said they're operating in Switzerland, Germany, and the UK, and are now looking at global rollout. Their platform should scale well because it doesn't rely on local weather services. It's based on physics models that can be used globally. We're not allowed to disclose current revenue figures.
Okay, let's talk about the funding history. As always, we modeled a cap table. Jua was incorporated in May 2022 in the Canton of Schweiz. Shortly afterward, they raised their first round. 2.5 million Swiss francs from two VCs, Promise Ventures from Chicago and Session VC from Switzerland, plus some business angels. If our numbers are correct, the valuation was around 10 million Swiss francs, a strong signal for a seed round.
In November 2023, about a year later, and in a tough market, they raised a $16 million seed round. We already covered that on Burn Rate. The round was led by 468 Capital from Germany and the Green Generation Fund. Also joining Cadmos Capital, USA, Notion Capital, UK, with Promise and Session VC participating again. The $16 million included some grant funding, so we estimate a pre-money valuation of 14 to 16 million, with a post-money around 30 million Swiss francs.
Now comes the Series A round, $11 million. It was led jointly by Ananda Impact Ventures from Munich and Future Energy Ventures from Berlin. Existing investors like 468 Capital and Promise Ventures also joined. Valuation for this round was just over 30 million Swiss francs pre-money. So if our figures are right, it was a flat or slightly up round.
That's something we're seeing a lot lately. Investors are paying much lower multiples and valuations than they used to. There's been a sharp normalization. Investors have become more sensitive, especially to future dilution and multiples paid. Exit outcomes are lower, so paying less early on makes sense. It's good for LPS, but tougher on founders who are facing more dilution. That aside, just to note, Jua has now raised 30 million since founding in just 3 years. That's impressive. The fact they secured another 11 million shows that Jua continues to convince investors, both technologically and strategically.
With the new capital, they'll scale further in the energy sector, integrate more deeply into trading workflows, and expand to other verticals: agriculture, aviation, logistics, anywhere where physical conditions are economically critical. What's your estimate of Jua's potential? Are we talking about a future infrastructure player for global AI-powered Earth simulation?
What they're building really could be that. If we think of large foundation models in language, like LLMs, Jua could be one of the players structuring physical reality through a foundation model. If it scales globally and offers the most accurate predictions, it could become the Earth's simulation model, a massive infrastructure layer for decades to come.
I'd say Jua is one of the few European companies not just building an AI feature, but a systematic technological foundation. To me, this is a startup with potential for global deep tech relevance. That's it from Burn Rate, the VC Insider podcast. If you'd like to support the show, subscribe to our newsletter and share it with your network. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great weekend. Take care and goodbye.